Our study in the book of Genesis continues in the 29th chapter. We're now ready to begin to the 31st verse of this chapter. And the setting for this passage is that Jacob has now married the two daughters of Laban, Rachel and Leah. And he's also been given the two handmaidens of these two daughters, Bilhah and Zilpah, respectively. And they're going to play an important role in Jacob's home and family life. And as we know, Jacob still has 7 additional years to serve Laban for the second daughter. He was defrauded in the marriage and was given Leah instead of Rachel. He paid the 7 years, but now he has to pay another 7 years for Rachel. And so Rachel is with him as well as Leah. He doesn't have to wait 7 years before he went into Rachel. As soon as he finished this festive week of the marriage, we learn in verse 30 that he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved Rachel more than he did Leah, and he served with him yet 7 other years. And next we're going to learn about the sons of Jacob. Whereas Abraham and Isaac had only 1 son each to whom the promises were given, now Abraham had at least 8 sons. You remember he had 1 son by Hagar, 1 son by Sarah, and 6 sons by Keturah. But only 1 son, Isaac, would be the one who would inherit the promises. Isaac had 2 sons, Jacob and Esau, but here again only 1 son, which would be Jacob, would inherit the promises. But all the sons of Jacob were to share in the promises. Jacob had 12 sons. We know that only one would be the biological ancestor of the Messiah, but all would be the children of Israel and would make up the promised nation, the chosen people. And so we're going to see a detailed account given in the last part of chapter 29, which we're beginning in right now, and in the first half of chapter 30 concerning the birth of Jacob's 12 sons and 1 daughter. So let us read Genesis 29, verse 31. And when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. We can plainly see in verse 31 that God was concerned for Leah as well as Jacob and Rachel. And although Leah was hated, he says here, the word hate really has to be interpreted as to what the meaning is for the passage. This word for hate is S-A-N-E, sine, and it represents an emotion ranging from intense hatred to the much weaker feeling of just being set against. And we're going to see here that this just means that Jacob loved Leah less than he did Rachel. He didn't have an intense hatred for her. He was disappointed because, actually, Rachel was the one he wanted to marry. Rachel was the one he loved originally, and it was by fraud that he actually was married to Leah. But this would, of course, create some unfortunate feelings. This would create a lot of tension and stress among these three. And Leah was going to be the one that would be left out, evidently, because Rachel and Jacob loved each other the more. But nevertheless, God was concerned for Leah, and he intervened. Rachel, like Sarah and Rebekah before her, was barren for a time until the Lord answered her prayers for a son. In the meantime, though, since Jacob was so partial to Rachel, and as we said, he just simply loved Rachel more, so he slighted Leah. God opened Leah's womb first and gave her, in fairly rapid succession, 4 sons. So let's read verse 32 through 35. And Leah conceived and bare a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, surely the Lord hath looked upon my affliction. Now therefore my husband will love me. And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, because the Lord hath heard that I was hated, he hath therefore given me this son also, and she called his name Simon. And she conceived again and bare a son, and said, now this time will my husband be joined unto me, because I have borne him 3 sons, therefore was his name called Levi. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she said, now will I praise the Lord. Therefore she called his name Judah, and left bearing. Jacob, of course, was anxious to establish his family, and so when he saw that Leah was more productive than Rachel in this respect, it seemed that he spent much more time with her and less with Rachel than he originally did or originally would have, because here was a woman who was producing a family for him. Each of her sons was named by Leah in accordance with her feelings at the time. Her firstborn was named Reuben, meaning behold a son. Her second was named Simon, which means hearing. And this was in thanksgiving for the fact that God had heard her prayers. She was praying to have children. The next was Levi, meaning attachment, which expressed her confidence that the three sons would now promote Jacob's more permanent attachment to her. Then came Judah, last, whom she simply calls praise, and this was a sign of her praise to Jehovah. It seemed that these four sons were born in fairly rapid succession, and probably within the space of 4 years or less. Leah's fruitfulness did, indeed, cause Jacob to love her more than before. It did create a greater bond between him and Leah. It did do what Leah wanted. And so Leah was not the left out one now so much, because she had the four sons to bind Jacob together with her. So these four sons did indeed cause Jacob to love her more than before, though Rachel always remained his first love. We see here that Leah seems to have been a godly woman who spent much time in prayer concerning her marriage and her children. Now remember, Leah was the older of the two girls of Laban, and Laban stated that it was the custom that the older had to be married before the younger, and that was his reason for going ahead and going through with this deception, so Leah would be married to Jacob. And she just done what any woman would want to do, want to have a family and be a mother and be a wife. And it seemed that she, though, was a godly woman. She acknowledged that her sons were given by the Lord, and as a result of her prayers to God and her difficult position in this home. And the fourth of her sons, Judah, was the only one whose name did not reflect her own personal station in life, his name being a simple expression of praise to God. It is perhaps significant that this is the one through whom God intended one day to bring the Messiah into the world. Judah would be the one who would have the lineage through which the Messiah would actually come. Now this concludes the 29th chapter of Genesis, and so we're going to continue in the same subject now about Jacob's sons as we move into chapter 30. So now let us read the first verse of Genesis chapter 30. And when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said unto Jacob, "Give me children or else I die." Rachel, of course, could hardly have been unmoved by the fact that her sister had been blessed with four sons while she remained barren. I mean, this is going to have a tremendous effect on Rachel. And it provoked this feeling here of envy. And envy is a bad feeling we have when something good happens to someone else. And so it can cause us to make some rash decisions. Now, of course, no doubt Rachel had resented Leah for many years, since she'd been forced to wait for her own marriage until Leah could find a husband. And the way it turned out, Leah had the same husband she had. And it was brought about by the demand of her father, of course. But here Leah is having children. She has four sons. This brings Jacob closer to Leah than he was. It had to bring him further away from Rachel than he was. And this had to have a tremendous effect on Rachel. And so, as she could see Jacob's love gradually shifting from her to Leah because of this, her envy finally caused her to show her irritation with an outburst to her husband. She said, "Give me children or else I die. I've got to have children. Give me children or else I die." So it was a demand she made. Possibly she felt that if Jacob would spend more time in her own bed and not so much with Leah, she would be more likely to conceive. Otherwise, her complaint was merely an emotional exclamation, and since she certainly realized that it was not Jacob who was sterile. And Jacob himself, no doubt, had been deeply disappointed in the fact that Rachel had not been able to produce children. It was she whom he had loved and had chosen to be the mother of the seed God had promised in the first place. But it hadn't seemed to work out that way. Leah was having the children. Rachel was still barren. So verse 2 says, "And Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, Am I in God's stead, who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" And he just explains to her, it's not me that's doing this. Her outburst, as could be expected, angered him. He struck back at her with a strong suggestion that there was something wrong in her own life, since God had not judged her worthy of being blessed with children. And this interchange of angry words between a husband and a wife, who really loved each other very much, shows us that even today in a Christian home, when there are too many worldly considerations in the relationship and not enough consideration for the true feelings of each other, then there can be these type of conflicts. And it also is a commentary on the frictions that necessarily appear when God's ideal of monogamous marriage is not followed. Being married to multiple women has to put a tremendous strain on this total relationship. He cannot do for the one woman like he should when he has three others he is having to deal with. It just doesn't make for the best kind of a home, never did, never will. And so verse 3 says, "And she said, Behold, my maid Bilhah, go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her." In desperation, Rachel decided to resort to the expedient that had been followed by Sarah a long time ago, that of having a child through her maid. How much better it would have been for husband and wife to have prayed together about the matter, trusting the Lord to answer in his own good time and will, rather than descending to such an expedient as this. Since they both knew about the unhappy result of Sarah's decision to take action like this, of course, in their defense, it should be noted that this device was an accepted social custom of the day. In fact, it is quite possible that it was for this very purpose, as a guard against barrenness, that Laban gave each of his daughters a personal maid. Humanly speaking, it was understandable and perhaps somewhat justifiable to take this expedient action. Spiritually, though, it can only be regarded as a testimony of their lack of faith in God's promises at this particular point. As we see the catastrophic results that came from Abraham going into Hagar and having a son. Here we had now another son who was not going to be in line for the promises. Another son who eventually had to be cast out. A son who would have a powerful nation and following, but would always be in conflict with the promised seed. There's conflict even to this day as a result of that mistake where Abraham went into Hagar and had a son by the maid. And so we're going to see that these multiple sons that Jacob has by these wives and these concubines really are going to eventually cause tremendous problems. There will come a time when the nation will divide against itself into two separate units, Israel and Judah. And they'll have conflicts and conflicts among themselves, and they'll finally be carried away into captivity and on because of these multiple sons that have come from this polygamous marriage. And so verses 4 through 8 say, "And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, God hath judged me, and hath also heard my voice, and hath given me a son. Therefore called she his name Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again, and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali." So in any case here, Rachel prevailed on Jacob to go in unto Bilhah. And this is just another term for having sexual intercourse with her, which, of course, the firm understanding that any fruit of this union would be regarded legally and morally as her own rather than Bilhah's. It's not clear whether or not the statement, "She shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her," is to be taken literally, though as a symbolic gesture of proxy childbirth. The maid may very well have been actually delivered of the child while lying on the lap of her mistress. In any case, Bilhah was immediately successful. She bore Jacob a son, whom Rachel named Dan, meaning justice. And this name simply indicated that God had heard her prayer and justified her in her husband's sight. And pleased with the quick success of this procedure, Rachel had Jacob continue to lie with Bilhah, now regarded as an actual wife of Jacob, though only a second-class wife, more like a concubine, and she soon became pregnant with a second son. This one Rachel named Naphtali, which means wrestlings. This unusual name was a reference to her long-continued rivalry with her sister. She stated over here, "With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I have prevailed." And so this was now her way of showing that she had finally prevailed in this rivalry, and Jacob would be fully restored in his love for her instead of for Leah. But we see that Leah was not yet ready to accept defeat. Though she herself had stopped bearing, she also had a maid, and she reasoned that what had worked for Rachel with this maid business would also work for her too. Therefore, she prevailed upon Jacob to take Zilpah, her maid, also as his wife, that she might have additional children by her. So verse 9 says, when Leah saw that she had left bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her Jacob to wife. Now, our own culture today, our own ideas today about marriage are so different that it's difficult for us to understand the attitude of mind which would give Leah and Rachel satisfaction when their husband would have sexual relations with their maids. The matter of productivity was apparently of such overriding concern, such of great importance to them, that the question of physical jealousy of their maids did not enter much into it. They'd rather see Jacob go into their maids so they could produce more children and continue the rivalry in that way than to be jealous of him going into the maid. And perhaps they also reasoned that the more sons they had, either directly or by having the maid to act for them, the more security they would have in old age. As far as Jacob was concerned, he seems to have been rather agreeable. Going indiscriminately to whichever bed would cause the least friction at the time. And it may be that he was virile enough that he rather enjoyed the sexual variety which this household rivalry afforded him. He may have been secretly enjoying this rivalry between Rachel and Leah. It also served the purpose of producing a large family quite rapidly, which seemed to also please him. And much of his indiscriminate moving about from bed to bed, however, was simply due to his desire to keep peace in the family, insofar as possible, by not favoring either wife in excess. This was a difficult situation with these four wives that Jacob had to deal with. And so verses 10 through 13 say, and Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop cometh. And she called his name Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. And Leah said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher. Leah's maid, Zilpah, we see here, also had two sons in quick succession. Once Jacob had gone in unto her, Leah named them Gad and Asher, meaning fortunate and happy, respectively. The King James translation here, a troop cometh, seems to be not the most accurate translation. The name Gad was associated with a pagan god of luck, but Leah used the word, no doubt, merely as an expression of her good fortune sent to her by God in the form of a fifth son. Then, when she had a sixth one, she truly was overjoyed. She who had been despised as unmarriageable for so long, she who had to be given through deceit to find a husband, it seems, that was a suitable husband, now would be acknowledged as unusually blessed, even by those young women who once had made her the object of their sneering gossip. She says, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed, and she called his name Asher. Now let's read verses 14 through 16. And Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest, and found mandrakes in the field, and brought them unto his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. And she said unto her, is it a small matter that thou hast taken my husband, and wouldest thou take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore he shall lie with thee tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came in out of the field in the evening, and Leah went in to meet him, and said, thou must come in unto me, for surely I have hired thee with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. Jacob now has eight sons, and it seems that it's been from 6 to 8 years since his marriage. The eldest son, Reuben, was thus probably about 7 years old by this time. He was at least old enough to play by himself in the field, and one day during the season of wheat harvest, Reuben chanced to discover mandrakes growing in the field. Now, this might not have been Laban's field, because you don't know Laban even raised wheat, but it could have been a neighbor's field. And Reuben knew that they were a fruit prized by his mother and by other women as well, so he picked them and brought them home to Leah. The mandrake is a small orange-colored berry-like fruit, much desired in ancient times as an aphrodisiac and a promoter of fertility. It has been called the love apple, and in Western countries, the May apple. It has also been used as a narcotic and emetic, especially its large roots. It was no doubt because of its supposed value in promoting fertility that both Leah and Rachel desired it. When Rachel saw what Reuben had brought his mother, she wanted them for herself, hoping that they might solve her problem of barrenness. Leah refused, however, no doubt realizing what Rachel was thinking about. It had apparently been some time since Jacob had actually made love to her, as he had been spending his nights with the two maids and with Rachel, whom he still loved most of all. Leah thought after her first four sons were born that Jacob's love for her was assured, but now Rachel was more in favor again. Rachel, badly wanting the mandrakes, finally acquired them from Leah by making a bargain, which must have been unpleasant for her. She agreed to insist that Jacob lie with Leah that night, hoping that later, when she would be with Jacob, the mandrakes would help her to be able to become pregnant. Leah eagerly met Jacob that evening, immediately as he returned from the field. Before he had a chance to go to Rachel or to Bilhah to Zilpah, she told him of her agreement with Rachel. She had no doubt also made herself as attractive as possible for Jacob, so that he quite willingly accepted her invitation and returned to her bed that night. He must have been somewhat amused, or maybe even flattered, by this odd bargaining for his favors which was carried on by the two sisters. He was quite willing to go in unto Leah, especially in view of her own eagerness to have him to do so, but even if he had not been willing, he would no doubt have done so just to keep peace in the family. Well, that brings our lesson to a close at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.